heard step four, they ran out. I'm a grateful alcoholic. My name is George. Most people run out on step four. I'd like to do a quick review of where we got to get to where we are. You know, I walked in here and I was maladjusted to life. I was in full flight from reality. I was mentally defective. That's how I walked into these rooms. And that's how I think we all walk in these rooms. And I really didn't like being told that. You know, and I was irritable, restless, and discontent. And I had to come to an area within that first step to believe I was an alcoholic. And that was believing it in my innermost self. Once I got that, I could move forward. A little later on in the big book on that first step, it says, a body badly burned by alcohol does not recover overnight, nor do twisted thinking and depression vanish in a twinkling. We are convinced that a spiritual mode of living is the most powerful health restorative. I was depressed. I was angry. All kinds of things going on. They were just things. I didn't know that at the time. That was my beliefs. Those were my feelings. And we'll get to that word feelings a lot tonight. I was full of depression. And I couldn't picture life with or without alcohol. I was very lonely. I was very afraid. And I didn't know where I was going to go with that. And that was my first step. You know, and I had to find a solution. And the solution was a man that carried a message to me that gave me hope. I found my second step, as I shared in here a couple of weeks ago, through a second tradition. There was a power that worked in this room where I saw people that were genuinely happy, and I didn't know how to steal it, I couldn't manipulate it, I couldn't buy it. And he talks about a power greater than self. Power greater than myself, when I got here, I looked related to the sixth tradition, money, property, and prestige. And that always diverted me from a relationship with a power greater than myself. So those were the things that I knew when I got here, but even admitting that there was something out there that might be stronger than me, I still had a lot of problem when I got to step three. And, you know, my sponsors gave me a little suggestion in the second step. If I had a God, what would he look like? Write down my, what, you know, what his attributes and assets would be. And I wrote that. And that's what I started praying to. And then I got to that third step. And last week I was talking about the third step. And it's about made a decision to turn our will and life over to the care of God. Well, first of all, what is my will and what is my life? And it was made very easy for me. My will is my thoughts and my life is my actions. And then the big word is the word care. See, it wasn't turning myself over to God. I was turning myself over to the care of God. And I had a lot of problems wrapping my head around that concept. So my sponsor suggested when you get a broken car and you give the mechanic the key, you're turning your car over to the care of the mechanic. Now that I can understand, but I still struggled with my will versus God's will, and I still struggle with that. 18 years later, I still am not always spiritually connected to what God's will is for me on any given day. I know what it isn't. It isn't for me to pick up a drink, because anything I've got, I'll lose. It's really that simple. That's as simple as I know to keep God's will in my life. It says, the ABCs in the back, it says that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. When we read in How It Works at the very end of it. That's my admittance. I admit that I'm an alcoholic and I can't manage my life. That no human power, no wife, no job, no child, no money, nothing is going to relieve my alcoholism. That God could and would if he was sought. So the B becomes that no human power is going to relieve my alcoholism is my acceptance of this. And that God could and would if he was sought becomes my acceptance. And once I get to that point, I went with my sponsor, and I shared that last week, that being convinced I was at step three of those three things. And I sat down and I did a third step prayer down on my knees with another man, and I got up, and when he got up, he said, are you willing to turn your will and life over to care of God? And I said, absolutely not, because I wasn't ready to do that. I was still fighting with God. I was still trying to manipulate God. I was still trying to tell God what I wanted. The wish list that the 12 and 12 talks about as a greedy child wishes for Santa Claus. Those were the things that I was doing. And he said, okay, you're willing to do the rest of the steps, like the back of the 12 and 12 talks about in step two, that we go forward and do the steps. And the third step is about practice. So I got on my knees. Well, I didn't get on my knees at first. I used to pray in the bathroom, in the shower, on the toilet bowl. I'd read the 24-hour day book or the daily reflections, and that's what I did. And that's how I prayed. And then one day I was late for work. I always tell this story. I ran out, and I realized I didn't pray. And I ran back in, and I got on my knees and said, God, I'm late for work, I'll talk to you later, and I ran back out. But that was the prayer I made. And I don't know if that kept me sober for the day, but I know in my mind it sure helped. So I got into the habit of prayer. It was about a discipline, and I wasn't disciplined. And being selfish and self-centered, and I was driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, and self-seeking, I didn't know how to let go of that stuff. So I did this third step with my sponsor on this great event, and I didn't even know what I was getting out of the third step. And there's some promises in the third step. Here are the promises of the third step, because we talk about the nine-step promises, and each week I've been trying to give you the promises of the step of the week before. It says in step three, here is the first promise. We found him deep within us. That's a nice promise. He has come to all who honestly sought him. And those are the big book. In the 12 and 12, it says, willingness develops. Nice promise. We acquire the rudiments of faith. And a locked door is now open. Now, I did this third step. I didn't feel anything. And my sponsor says, okay, you made a commitment to do the next phase of this, and that is you can no longer think your way out of this. You're going to have to start acting your way out of this. I said, what do you mean by that? He says, you can't think your way into good acting. You're going to have to act your way into good thinking. So here's a pen. I want you to go home and write your inventory. And it says, next we launch on a course of vigorous action. The first step, which is a personal house cleaning, which many of us never attempted. Though the decision was vital and a crucial step, you could have little permanent effect unless at once followed by a strenuous effort to be rid of the things in ourselves which had been blocking us. Our liquor was but a symptom. So we had to get down to causes and conditions. Therefore, we started on a personal inventory. So I got my sponsor to give me my assignment, and he says, go home and look at the big book, and I looked at page 64 and 65, and no matter what I did, it made no sense to me. No matter how I looked at it, I couldn't get my head wrapped around it. I have a lot of four-step stories. I mean, we all have stories. So my sponsor said, okay, I want you to write down your resentments and your grudges, which the big book talks about. It's a list. And I told him I'm working on it. Every week I was telling him I was working on it, and about 3 weeks later he says to me, let me see what you got. And I said, well, I didn't work on it. He says to me, okay, you can either go back to your third step, because you're really not willing to go forward, or you can tell me what's going on, or you can find another sponsor. Real simple. And that was at Denny's. I says, no, I'll tell you next week. Not today, next week. You know, the procrastination is there already. I went home, and he says, on the way out, he says to me, and by the way, if you want, you can go home and you can write it and burn it. Whatever it is that's blocking you from this writing. So what I did is I went home, and I didn't write it, because I knew I lived in a halfway house, and whatever I wrote, somebody in my room was going to see it. I mean, the insanity that I was thinking during this process. So he asked me at the during the week to say, take 5 minutes and pray. Before, and asked God to help me write. And I did, and I still refused to write. I had a lot of things I wanted to say, but I wouldn't put them on paper. Because once I put it on paper, I knew you had me. So that next week I got back, and I said to him, he said, let me see it. I said, I didn't do it. He says, okay, and he got up and started to walk away. I said, Larry, wait a minute. And he came back, and I told him a story, and the story is very simple. I was 7 years old. I walked out of a bowl hack in Brooklyn. There was two women, and in those days, if we were kids, and when we were fighting, if older people walked by, we stopped. We let them go, and then we got back into our fighting or whatever we were doing. If it was off the stoop or stickball or whatever we were doing, we always stopped and let the older people go by. And we were always told to be nice to older people. And I took these packages for these two women, and I walked into their apartment, and they said, would you like some milk and cookies? I said, absolutely. And they locked the door, and they weren't two women. They were two men, and I was raped. It took me a long time to tell that story out loud. And it discolored my world. And that's at the point in my life where my whole world changed. I felt dirty. I felt ugly. I couldn't tell my family because of my family's belief system. I couldn't share it with my sisters because They would never talk to me. And I carried that for many, 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 many years. I was 44 years old from the age of 7 before I ever talked about that. That was my deep, dark secret. I told him that story. And he says, oh, that happened to you too? I said, what? And that was the first time in my life I knew I was not alone. He didn't have the same situation. He had a different situation. But the feelings and the emptiness and the dirtiness and all the stuff that goes along with that, whether you're a guy or a girl, if that's happened to you, I know I'm not alone. And that's a great feeling today to know that. And once I was able to share that with him, I went home and I started on my immoral inventory. And we'll talk about that more in a minute. This was step 4. We searched out the flaws in our makeup which caused our failure. I can tell you where that whole incident of when I was 7 led when I was in high school to beat up on other people who didn't have the same sexual preferences that I did, and what it did to me later on in life and throughout my life, and the insecurity within myself and the low self-esteem and all the stuff we all go through. And we all have something. Whatever it is, there's something that blocks us from the sunlight of that spirit. It says, being convinced that self manifested in various ways was what had defeated us. We considered its common manifestations. I can't even say it. Resentment is the number one offender. I didn't even know what a resentment was till I got into Alcoholics Anonymous. I just know I didn't like anybody. And anybody did, it pissed me off. It's the only way I know how to say it, because that's how I felt. And I didn't get angry, I went into rage. So my answer to anybody that annoyed me was to hit them. And I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, and they told me I couldn't behave that way. I had to act my way into better thinking. I would sit there and steam. And my sponsor said, a resentment, George, is when you take poison and you want someone else to die. You see, they go home, and they don't have anything going on. Your head is busy, it's churning, it's going, and it's ugly, and it gets worse. So I didn't understand what that meant, so he suggested that I do my 4-step, go out and find a 4-step. Now, being a good alcoholic, I went into the rooms and I asked people about the 4-step. So the first 4-step was this guide right here. It's not officially AA-approved literature. It's the very first Hazelton guide. Then they had this 4-step guide. Then they had this 4-step guide. Not confused enough. I go around and I find the 4-step guide that was 19, I can tell you the year this was in a minute, 93 this came out, talks about resentments, it talks about chapter 5 in the big book, it's 1, 2, 3, 4 columns, and then it goes into fears and the other things that we talk about, and in the back there's a little checklist of on 3 columns, now you go from 4 columns to 3, I'm confused. Then I found there was another one, this is a very old one for those people who are older than I am, will remember this one, it's a 2 column and a whole lot of checklists. Then there's a 5 column, then there's a 6 column, then there's the big one, then there's the inventory process, then there's the big book seminar, then there's the men's, and then there's the feelings checklist, and then there's the feelings inventories, and there's the fear prompt sheet, and then there's the one that if you want to write down what you're feeling and how you're feeling and all the different questions you can ask, it is like 28 pages in there. And then there's the welcome guide to the 4-step that's like impossible. I think it's 220 questions that I wouldn't give anybody unless they were dying. So I didn't know what to do. Then my sponsor came up with another one. He says, why don't you go look in the 12 and 12 and find the questions? What questions? So there's a bunch of questions in the 12 and 12. And I'll explain them all in a minute. And I still didn't know how to do a 4-step. You see, I was being blocked. And I believe the 4-step is the pen light step. Because if you don't pick up the pen, you'll never see the light. Because that's what clears you. 3 times in the big book, it suggests that we write it. We look at our list. We go back to our list and we write again. So 3 times it says it's there in black and white in front of us. You see, when we put something on paper, at least when I put something on paper, I can't speak for all of us, it loses its power. And that was a great relief for me. See, because now when I told him this, that wasn't my only problem. And I still couldn't read the big book. No matter what I did, I read the big book across, never in the columns. So my sponsor suggested I read what's right above the columns. It says we're as definite as this example. It's an example of a four-step. And he sat down with me and he said, George, did you ever work in retail? I said, yeah, I worked for Sears and Roebuck many years ago. He says, did you ever do inventories? I said, yeah. He says, well, when you did inventories, how were they done? He says, well, I had one department where they would count four hash marks and make five, and you count the fives at the end of it. I had another one that wrote whole numbers. He says, what was the idea of that? To do an inventory. That's all it is. Doesn't matter if you do it this way or you do it that way. It doesn't matter if you write a life story. There's only one wrong inventory. The one you don't write. So I said, okay, what do you want me to do? He said, I want you to go home and make a list of the people on your grudge list. I have my first four-step with me. I have nothing to hide in it anymore. So the first one on my list was my father. So he said to me, after you write the person's name down, write the things that bothered you. So I wrote the name down, and I wrote that he was never around. He never spoke of his feelings. He showed little or no affection. At least that's my belief. I don't know if that's the truth, but it's my truth. Mm-hmm. My sisters don't see that the same way. We've often talked about it. He was over-demanding. That's a truth. He expected too much, and on and on and on. And my mom was a pal, not a mom. She was more of a friend. All the things, and my sisters, and my children, and God, and myself. And that came up to be this list right here. And then I got done with it. I said, oh, I'm done. This is not so hard after I knew what to do. That took me all of 25 minutes, maybe an hour. Over two or three days, I sat and I prayed and I wrote. He says, now I want you to go to the 12 and 12. And I want you to look up the seven deadly sins. And I looked them up of pride, greed, lust, anger, envy, sloth, and gluttony. Pragles, they used to call it. And he said, I want you to take that same list, and next to each of them, write down how it affects you. So I made my little checklist that he asked me to do, and I checked them all, and I never thought I was an angry person. See, I knew I was a rageful person, and I knew I had a lot of pride, although it was false pride. I never saw myself as lazy or angry. And guess what my two biggest things are? Anger and laziness. Go figure it. So after I got the seven deadly sins, he suggested I now go to the big book and go to the page 67 where it says, putting out of the mind the wrongs other has done, we look at our own part. We resolutely look for our own mistakes. The inventory was ours, not the other man's. So I did the first part of that inventory, and he says, good, now that you're done taking everybody else's inventory, now it's time to take yours. And I said, what do you mean by that? He says, well, where were you lazy if nobody else was involved? At work and about change. I didn't like change. You know, where was I envious? My ex-wife having my children. You know, different things had different feelings. And we're back to those feeling things again, and I'll get to that one again. And I wrote down a list with each of the seven deadly sins and the things in it that I saw within myself. Good sponsorship is real important. Then he says, okay, we're going to go back now to the big book. And for each one of those, after I wrote the first one, he says, okay, laziness at work, what did it cause? So we sat down, and it talks like Bill and Ebby, when they sit down on page 13, and said, my friend and I made a list. My sponsor and I sat down together because I was stuck, and I needed to get the blockage out of the way. I needed a spiritual enema, and I didn't know how to get it. And what ended up happening was he turned around and he asked me at work what happened when I was lazy at work. And I came down, I didn't want to be there, I was tardy, I took credit for work that wasn't done, I over-exaggerated, I did minimal tasks, and I did not follow the rules. And then I went down the list about change and about relationships, yeah, a lot about relationships in every area of my life. And then from the laziness, I did the other six sins. And I did my inventory that way. And then after I did that, he said, okay, now I want you to go back to the beginning and read across. Just the same way the big book says. See, this is the big book outline. And I didn't even know I was doing it at that time. And then what the result of me being lazy was pain, was threatened with warnings, was constantly under my boss's eyes. I was forcibly discharged and then reinstated. That's a good thing to being lazy. It sounds kind of familiar to me a lot. I never thought I was fired from a job till I got sober and realized I was fired from two jobs. Never knew it. I thought I quit them. Shows you how sharp my mind was even after they told me they didn't want me there anymore. One job, they terminated me for intellectual dishonesty. In other words, I was stealing. Nice way of putting it. And the other job, they found a little bag with some powdered alcohol in it, and they escorted me off of Ellis Island where I was working and told me not to come back, that my services were no longer needed. And I thought I quit. That shows you how warped I changed that story. But that's what an inventory does. It gives me a much clearer picture of myself. There's that warped perception and twisted thinking that I had. So I did this for all of my things, and then I finished this wonderful misery of ripping myself apart and not feeling good about myself. And then because of the way I was, my sponsor asked me to do two things. The first thing he asked me to do was write three little paragraphs. One on my workaholism, because I used to work about anywhere from 90 to 120 hours a week, nonstop, and that's what I thought, because that's what my father did. That's what I had to do. And the reason my father did that is he was supporting a family. He had to hold three jobs so his family could eat. I was doing it because I knew that's what my father did. That's what you're supposed to do. I had no idea why I did it. I just kept doing it. So there's that warped perception again. So I wrote a little bit, and you watch the size of the writing, about my workaholism. Then he asked me to write about my self-protection. I used to protect myself. I built a wall around myself, and I wouldn't let nobody in for a very long time. So it got a little bigger. And then he asked me to write about me being an egomaniac. That took two pages. It's only a paragraph long. And that's what I did, because I didn't see myself clearly. But when I put it down, it pointed out a lot of my flaws. Along the same line, after I got all that done and I really felt bad because I didn't see anything good and I was a worthless piece of garbage. And that's how I felt. And he says, I want you to write down your good characteristics and your attributes. And I didn't feel I had any. Here's where sponsorship comes in again. My sponsor made a suggestion that I walk into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, go to the people I don't like, and ask them what qualities they see in me. Now, if you're like me, you don't want to go to anybody you don't like and ask them what good they see in you, because I figured nobody liked me. But I did what my sponsor asked, and lo and behold, I came up with a list a lot longer than I thought it was going to be of my attributes and assets. So, after I did that, I was done with my fourth step. And it's kind of interesting because the hardest thing for me to do was see any good in me. And when I got to the 12 and 12, it tells us that every serious emotional problem can be seen as a case of misdirected instinct. When that happens, our greatest natural assets, the instincts, have turned into physical and mental liabilities. I sit with my sponsees a lot, and I talk about when I'm mentally not okay, I start to break down physically, and my only solution is spiritual. When I'm physically not well, I break down mentally, and my only solution is spiritual. So my answer to whether I'm physically not okay or mentally not okay is a spiritual solution. And I didn't know that when I got here. That was a gift that was given to me by a sponsor. It talks about, as we go through this, in step four, it says, we want to find out exactly how and what way our natural desires warped us. We wish to look squarely at the unhappiness this has caused others and ourselves. That's the two different inventories. First, the one I took on everybody else, then the one I take on me. By discovering what our emotional deformities are, we can move toward their correction. I had a lot of emotional deformities. You know, I came in here, I blamed my ex-wife for a long time because she wouldn't let me talk to my kids. When I got sober, and I deserved that. That's how I looked at it. And somebody asked me, you weren't around for all those years. What makes you think you deserve anything? That hurts, but that's truth. And truth is truth. My truth versus the truth. And the truth was I wasn't a good custodian to my kids. I shared that last week when we were talking about my children. It took a very long time for one of my children to come back in my life. One still is not in my life. And I take that inventory regularly. And there's not a thing I can do to change that. All I have to do is let God change that. We'll talk about that a little later on. So here I am finally looking at myself for the first time and owning up to my own part of my own life. See, I didn't lose anything from alcohol. I gave it all away. I chose to live the way I lived by putting everybody else behind my addiction of alcoholism, and in my case, using drugs. It was that simple. You don't get out from under out of a cardboard box under a bridge and walk in Alcoholics Anonymous and say, I'm spiritual. Let me help you guys out. You come in here because you're broken and there's nothing left and you can't look at yourself, at least I couldn't. Without a willing and persistent effort to do this, you know, it took me a long time before I got started on my inventory. But once I got started on it, there was no stopping it. And that was the gift that I got of the fourth step. Persistent trial to do this, there could be little sobriety or contentment. See, I was miserable while I was doing this. Without a searching, a fearless moral inventory, most of us have found that the faith which really works in daily living was still out of reach. See, I was still miserable. I wanted my kids back. I wanted the state of New York to get off my back. I wanted my job to call me and say, you know, we want you to come back and be the business agent again. Like, you know, come on. That's a fantasy world I was living in. And I couldn't own up to my failures or my irresponsibilities, not so much that they were failures. So as I sat here, it says, whenever the human being becomes a battleground for his instincts, there can be no peace. And I sat in these rooms with my mind whirling. I would sit in here plotting how I can get back to New York, kill my wife so I can get the kids, sneak back here and nobody will know. Years of that went on. Not hours, but years. We have a relationship today, my ex-wife and I. Don't ask me how that came about. I still say I don't know if that's a blessing or a curse, but we have a relationship. The instincts on rampage balk at investigation. You see, when I'm uncomfortable, I don't want to look at it. I'd rather go out and go bowling with the guys or go out to dinner rather than sit down at a desk and write what's really going on. Because the second I got to look at it, I got to own it. If I spot it, I got it, and I had it, and I didn't want to look at it. I was trying to duck it and run from it. And the more I tried to duck it and run from it, the more it showed itself. Instincts on rampage, the minute we make a serious attempt to probe them, we are liable to suffer serious reactions. And I had some serious reactions. I would tell the story, I was at a halfway house, and I finally got to speak to my wife on the phone. I'm in the middle of doing my four step, and I finally get to talk to her, and I'm supposed to talk to my kids, and she's making me jump through hoops. And the guy just got out of jail, just got into the halfway house, comes by and hang. In those days, we used pay phones. Hung up the phone. So being the good guy I was, I went into my apartment. I grabbed an axe in one, a butcher cleaver in one hand, and a chef's knife and stuck it in my pocket. And as while he was on the phone talking to whoever he was, I took the butcher cleaver and I cut the wire on the phone. And then I started chasing him around the property. They grabbed me, they took away the butcher cleaver. They told me I better behave. I said, sure I will. As soon as they walked away, I grabbed the knife and I wanted to stab him. That's what I wanted to do. So they grabbed me, and I'm not going to tell you the end result of that. We joke about that I was locked up in a dog cage overnight. They did that today. They'd probably lose their license. But that's what I needed. That was really what I needed, because I was so angry. And as soon as they put me in the cage, I said, this ain't nothing. I slept under a bridge. I can sleep in a dog cage. And I did. I had no problem with it. We also clutched to another wonderful excuse for avoiding an inventory. Present anxieties and troubles, we cry, are caused by the behavior of other people. People who really need a moral inventory. We finally believe that only they treat us better, we'd all be all right. Therefore, we think our indignation, justified and reasonable, that our resentments are the right kind. We aren't the guilty ones, they are. I walked around blaming everybody for everything that walked in my life. I joke around with you guys about how I saw the steps. When I saw 8 and 9, I took everybody's inventory that screwed me over. And 9, I was going to say, they were going to come and tell me how sorry they were for what they did to me. I never looked at what I did. And that's what that inventory did. It had me look at me for the very first time. It never occurred to us that we needed to change ourselves to meet conditions, whatever they were. Last week I shared I was 6 months sober, and I was walking out of a meeting, and I was served with papers to give my kids up. And I got real angry, to say the least. And I couldn't adjust to that real well. I walked into the room, I threw a chair at somebody, I knocked over a bookcase, and somebody said, pick it up, straighten it out, and then go speak to a guy by the name of Ben T. And I spoke to Ben T, and Ben and I sat down, and he asked me a question, what kind of custodian were you? And the big book talks about a jumping off place. And that was a jumping off place for me. Because what ended up happening was I realized for the first time that I was not emotionally present for my own children. And that was my wake-up call in Alcoholics Anonymous. And once I realized that, I realized it wasn't what other people did anymore. It mattered what I did from here on in. And what I had to do was write it all out. So as I went forward with this process, it talks about we had to see that when we harbored grudges and planned revenges for such defects, we were really beating ourselves with a club of anger we had intended to use on others. We learned that if we were seriously disturbed, our first need was to quit the disturbance, regardless of what or who caused it. You see, most of my disturbances wasn't caused by other people. It was the behaviors that I had, and I blamed them. And it took a very hard look at myself, in black and white, to finally see that. It was a big struggle. And I didn't like the way I felt when I was writing this thing. I don't know about anybody else. I did not feel good about it. We could perceive them quickly in others, but only slowly in ourselves. I needed a sponsor to tell me, you know, George, you know, you think everybody in here is an asshole. Pardon my English. And I said, yes, I do. He says, good. When you get off your head, you'll realize you're looking from the bottom up. Now, you guys got to understand, that's why the think sign is upside down, he told me. I believed everything he told me. I mean, if he told me to stand on a corner of my head and spit wooden nickels, I would try it because I believed he had something that I really needed and didn't know how to get. He gave me love when I was unlovable. And I listened to what he told me to do as I went through this process. These feelings, our feelings, back to those feelings. Now, here's the big one. Feelings aren't facts and thoughts aren't acts. And I hated that statement because what I feel is my truth. It's not the truth, it's my truth. So these feelings generate fear, a soul sickness in its own right. So what I was doing is I was living in fear my whole life and thought I was fearless. Then fear in turn generates more character defects. Unreasonable fear that our instincts will not be satisfied drives us to covet the possessions of others, to lust for sex and power, to become angry when our instinctive demands are threatened, to be envious when the ambitions of others seem realized while ours are not. I don't know how many people in here watch somebody go out with a pretty car and say, damn, that son of a gun, I'm doing all this right. Why ain't I got one? I know I did it. I mean, I tell the story of how I got here. I started with a little skateboard, and people were driving already, and then from a skateboard, I got to a scooter. It took 6 years before I got my license back, and I never had a DUI. And I was watching these little young guys come in here, and girls, and they're getting nice cars, good jobs. I'm busting my ass cleaning tables. What went wrong in my life? But I'm grateful because everything that was going on during that inventory process, I needed the time to work on me. See, so I was given exactly what I needed. Had I been running around, I don't know if I'd be sitting here today. We eat and drink and gob for more of everything than we need, fearing we shall never have enough. And with a genuine alarm at the prospect of work, we stay lazy. We loaf and procrastinate, or at best, we work grudgingly under half steam. These fears are termites that ceasingly devour the foundation of whatever sort of life we're trying to build. You see, as I worked this inventory process, I got very confused of where I wanted to go. I didn't want to be here, but I didn't want to go back to where I was. And I figured when I started seeing all the stuff that was piling up on me, I would never be able to straighten it out. Never. And then somebody said, it's not your job to straighten it out. Where's your third step? Where's God in all this? See, then I was praying, I was doing, but I wasn't letting it happen. I was trying to make this process happen. So as I did this fourth step, and I'm going to show you a couple of different ones, in a year later, I did the that brown one that I showed you. That's this one. A year after that, I got to do another one, which is the 28 questions that are in the 12 and 12, which I did at a spiritual retreat when I was having problems. That was a year and a half. That was in 1996. And I do an annual inventory. Now, I'm not going to get into it with anybody, whether I do a four-step once or I do it every year. I don't get hung up in that. If you do it once and you never have to do another one, that's great. But the more I uncover, the more I heal. And as I'm doing this action of inventory, the inventory process for me is all about uncovering, discovering, discarding, and then recovering. I have to go through this process first to see what it is. I uncover it, and I write it down. And with my sponsor, I discover what I can do about it. Then if it's no good, I can discard it. And from that process, I start recovering. And that's my fourth step. So that's what the fourth step has given me. So if I walk in here with warped perception, faulty judgment, and lack of awareness, and I make all my decisions based on that, and I'm writing that way, I better not look at an inventory alone, because I'm not seeing it clearly. That's what a sponsor was for. I used to say I'm nuts, and my sponsor says, yeah, you know what nuts means? So what's nuts mean? He says, you're not using the steps. And I was nuts. I was not using the steps. And by using the steps and allowing them to infiltrate my life, I started lightening up on how I looked at myself and how I looked at others. It says, if you've been thorough and personal about our if you have been thorough about our personal inventory, you have written down a lot. We have listed and analyzed our resentments. We have begun to comprehend the futility and their fatality. We have commenced to see the terrible destructiveness. We have begun to learn tolerance, patience, and goodwill towards all men, even our enemies, for we are looking at them as sick people. We have listed these people we have hurt by our conduct and are willing to straighten out the past if we can. We hope you're convinced now that God can remove whatever self-will has blocked you off from him. If you have already made a decision and an inventory of your grosser handicaps, you made a good beginning. So they're telling me the four steps only a beginning. That beginning, that being so, you will have swallowed and digested some big chunks about yourself. Some big chunks and truth about yourself. I follow a lot of big chunks and truth about myself. So if I remember what a principle was when we talked about it in step one, it's a rule of conduct, a basic law, truth, or an assumption. So when I walk into this fourth step, from what I wrote down, I have a lot of negativity going on. I have unhappiness, obsession, misery. I was helpless. I was disillusioned. I was filled with ridicule. I was power-driven. I was unreasonable. I was inconsiderate. I was revengeful. I was jealous. I was angry. I was full of self-will. I looked to dominate. I was frustrated. I looked for prestige. I was full of fear. I was full of depression, guilt, power-driven. I was melancholy. I was morbid. I self-loathed. I wallowed. I smothered. I had grudges. I was full of self-pity, vengefulness, victimized. I blamed. I was maladjusted. I was immoral. I was demanding. I was full of excuses and justifications. Fear was throughout my whole life. I was coveting things. I was afraid of rejection. I was full of pride, despair, and self-righteousness. I was grandiose. I was avoiding everybody. I don't know how many times the phone rang and I ducked it because I didn't want to answer it. So I was doing a lot of avoidance. I had alibis and excuses. I was dominating. I was dependent on others. I was insecure. I was willful. I was manipulative. I was hurtful. I was full of I was suffering. I was trying to control. I was self-centered. I was trying to ambush others. I was stuffing my feelings. I used self-justification. I worried about people finding out what was going on. I was stubborn. I was evading. I was bitter. I was full of anxiety, and I had unreasonable demands on everybody. I was griping in here a lot. I don't know about anybody else. I was unprincipled. I was looking for shortcuts. I was cheap. And then I was also extravagant at the same time. I was full of gambling at the time when I got here. I had coldness. I was lying. I was bluffing. I had lack of confidence. I was inadequate. I was financially unstable. I felt like I was cheated and I was cheating. And most of all came this big word, sin. See, when I saw the word sin, I knew this was a religious thing. And my sponsor said, George, if you want to know what your flaws are, your negativity is, just think of the word of sin as anything that is selfish in nature. Selfish in nature. That to me is a sin today. When I am running on selfish self-centeredness, I'm running on sin. Because it's selfish. And this is not a program for selfish people. It's really not. This is not a selfish program. This is a program for selfish people. It's a selfless program. It's a life-giving program. So by doing this inventory, I finally started getting some security. I found companionship through other people in this fellowship who have gone through this process. I found a relationship with a God that I didn't want when I first got here, starting to understand God more. I was getting content. I was practicing persistence and willingness. I started putting more effort into my recovery. I kept searching. I found out what morality was. I knew what immorality was. I was getting secure, and I was getting faith and fearlessness. I was finding out God dependence. I was looking for guidance and becoming responsible. Now, an alcoholic that becomes responsible, that's a tough one. I knew how to take inventory, mine and not yours anymore. I found some peace and happiness out of this process. I found some calmness. I started knowing how to take stock in myself and others. I found some balance. I found out I had assets, and there was reassurance. I found out what quiet time was. I found out how to be quiet, really look at things, and know how to pray before I did any writing. I found out a lot about sobriety, because I was finally getting really sober and wanted to be here. It wasn't that I had to be here anymore. Now I wanted to be here. This was the spot that I did it. I had a new perspective. I started to progress. I started coping much better. I gained some confidence, some peace of mind, some patience. I even had good judgment. And determination and discipline. I found brotherhood in here, in this fourth step. Honesty and self-discipline. Found some comprehension. I learned how to reflect, and I got some clarity. And the best clarity I got was that it didn't matter what was going on, that I had a relationship with another human being that I never had, and a relationship with a God that I didn't want. And that relationship with the God that I didn't want, I started wanting. You know, we talk about the four steps, the steps, and we talk about the prayers in the book. In the fourth step, there are seven prayers. How about that? And there's a lot of good ones. My favorite one is on page 66 and 67. It talks about when someone offended, although they didn't like the way they behaved, they, like ourselves, were sick too. We try to show them the same kindness and courteous. We cheerfully grant the sick friend. When someone offended, we said, "This is a sick man. How can I be helpful to him? God save me from being angry." One of the best prayers I know in the fourth step is, "Thy will be done." Every time I wrote, "Thy will be done," I don't want to write this. You know, but I had to if I wanted to get sober and stay sober. Some of the other ones is, "God save me from being angry, thy will be done." We ask him to remove our fear and direct our attention to what he'd have us be. It's a nice little prayer. We ask God to mold our ideas and help us live up to them. That's a big order. And in meditation, we ask God what we should do about each specific matter. See, after I wrote all this, I had to pray on each of all of this. And the gift that I got out of the fourth step was that I'm not afraid to look at me anymore. I started getting comfortable in my own skin, which I never was. I didn't need you for approval anymore. I was starting to be all right with me, alone, without having to run and do. I became a human being, not a human doing. And what ended up happening through this process was that it was happening. I wasn't making it happen anymore. I wasn't manipulating it. I wasn't trying to get it done. I was just following what was laid out before me by my sponsor. The thing I tell everybody when it comes to a fourth step, that when you're doing your fourth step, do whatever your sponsor asks. If he asks you to do a life story, do a life story. If he asks you to do it out of the 12 and 12, do it out of 12 and 12. If he asks you to use one of the guides, do the guides. They all work. Every one of them works. Now, what works for me is I take a different one all the time. I went to an AWOL group in 1990 5 and 96, because I wanted to do the steps again. I did the 12 steps through Christian Fellowship so I can get a different view of the steps. I've done them in AWOLs. I've done them at big book studies. I've done them in seminars. I've gone and done the back to the basics, where you do all 12 steps in 3 days or 4 days. There are our courses. That goes way back to the beginning. So there's no wrong way. There's a guy, and I want to show a four-step guide of... there's a guy that I knew who came out of the Fort Lauderdale Men's Group. His name was Father Hanley. And Father Hanley would give somebody a piece of toilet paper or a napkin and say, I want you to write the 10 worst things you ever did in your life that you won't tell anybody. And then he'd sit down with you and he'd go over them. And that was your fourth step. I know a lot of people who got a lot of years, and that's the only way they did them. There's one that I have in here that I really like, which is 7 questions. And for those people who like the old inventories, and when I say the old inventories, I'm talking about Clarence Snyder. Clarence Snyder was one of the third kind of guy that got a lot of people sober. He was up in... He had 7 questions, and these were the 7 questions. In looking back over your life, what memories are still painful, guilty, and dirty? That's question 1. 2, in what ways do you consider yourself an inadequate person? 3, who do you resent and why? Be specific. 4, what do you conceive to be your defects of character as you see them today? 5, what is the nature of the ongoing problems you have with people close to you in human relationship? What seems to always happen when you have these things that blow up? Pattern. 6, in what way do you believe that AA can help you with any of these problems? And 7, in what way do you believe that AA can begin to change things? Now that comes out of a work guide that they use in Texas today. And the 4-step inventory, and here's the other thing about a 4-step inventory, it's about 3 things. It's about self, society, and sex. That's all it's about. So we're taking an inventory. And there's another inventory sheet. It tells you what it is, and then there's a whole worksheet that goes behind it. That's also out of a Texas Big Book study. So there's no wrong way of taking an inventory, as I said at the beginning. But what I do know is that there are 3 inventories in the 12 steps. We have the 4-step inventory, we have an 8-step inventory, and we have a 10-step inventory. I believe, and this is what I believe, this is nowhere in our literature, but this is what I've come to believe, I do the 4-step for me. That's what I work on me with. I do the S step so I can work on you and make my clean up my wreckage, make the list of the people I got to go out and straighten up the messes I created. And the 10-step inventory is about my relationship that I'm going to have with God. Because when I do an inventory immediately, first thing I'm doing is asking God in. And in step 11, he's going to say, go back and do a 10-step inventory. So we're going to get to that later on. So those are the 3 inventories. So it's about self, it's about you, and it's about God. Thanks for letting me share.